Shopify's already taken the cash register online, helping millions sell billions around the world. But did you know that Shopify can do the same thing at your retail store? Give your point of sale system a serious upgrade with Shopify. That's right, Shopify is the sound of selling everywhere. Online, in-store, on social media, and beyond. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. With Shopify POS, you can accept credit cards, mobile payments, and every other major payment method, all with low fees and transparent pricing, starting on day one. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/MLB podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/MLB podcast to take your retail business to the next level today. Shopify.com/MLB podcast.
In celebration of opening day, we've got a special episode of the Moth Podcast for you. The theme is baseball and the surprising ways it connects people.
I gaze out at the players on the field, and then I look over at my dad, and I realize that in the silence between us that something has changed. It's like I'm seeing him for the first time.
Two stories about baseball, family, and so much more. The episode's available right now. Subscribe to the Moth Podcast to make sure you hear it.
Yeah, there should be some passion. This doesn't have to be boring.
Okay, one thing the game needs is more people like you.
Still have grown men run around tight pants.
It's Mookie Betts.
This is Daniel Bard.
It's Steve Aoki.
There's Saul Tlamakia.
This is Brock Holt.
Hey, this is John Lester.
Baseball isn't boring.
Welcome to Baseball Isn't Boring. Here's your host, Rob Radford.
All right, baseball is not boring in large part because of these guys. It's been that way for a while. Tim Dirks, Steve Adams of MLB Trade Rumors. Basically, you want to talk about a launching pad for baseball not being boring? Like this, you guys have got us through so many important months of the calendar year. As we sit here right now, this being one of them. But I just want to say thank you for that. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks for always being a supporter of ours. We love the off season here. You know, it's our time to shine. I mean, aside from the trade deadline, it's when things are really popping, and it's just super fun.
Yeah. Go ahead, Steve.
This time of year is awesome. Like, I mean, I know we're going to talk about the top 50 and everything coming up here, but like, it's just a ton of fun to spend the time kind of, you know, kicking things back and forth with Tim and Anthony and Dara and our whole team and really focusing in on that. And it's a lot of work goes into it, but it's always a really fun time.
Well, there's as you said, we're going to get into the top 50, which is, it's just one of the many great things MLB Trade Rumors does. But for me, it's like Christmas in November is great. It's so good. And I can't, I've told you guys this before. I am in awe of how accurate you guys are, how close you guys are. And I know that you put a lot of work into it, so it's no accident at all. I guess the first thing I'll ask you guys is that having done this, how many years have you done the top 50 for?
We've been a website for 17 years. So I don't know if this is the 16th or 17th or whatever. I used to do much simpler versions of this, like in the early days. There was a time when I was the only writer on the website, and if you go back and read those posts, they're really embarrassing. They're nothing like you could find on the website now. Sometimes Steve sends them to me because they're funny. They're very conversational and just lame. But still, I would crank out a list, and I would crank it out in like a few days back then, so I wouldn't count that. But I'd say at least for the last decade or even more, you know, we've been doing an involved collaboration top 50 process. It used to be at one point that we just predicted teams and we would have a consensus team pick and we wouldn't even really predict the contract. Then we added contract predictions, and then we decided that the team predictions were such like a goofy thing that you can't really nail, that why don't we each do our own and give them a taste of, like, here's what three or four different guys think. And then we don't have to sit there and try to come to a consensus on this team's going to sign this guy, and because it's all a big puzzle. And so, yeah, I mean, it's really evolved over the years.
It's so good. And so let me ask you this, each of you. Give me the one, and this is maybe an unfair question because I should have given you the heads up. Give me one which you're like, man, I nailed that one. I feel really, really good about the fact that I nailed that. And there's been a lot of them, but there's probably some that, you know, that a lot of people are like, I did not see that coming in. And I find myself saying that all the time. I might look at your list and like, no, no chance. And then boom, there it is. It's right on the money. Is that a fair question? You guys have any top of mind?
I would say one that sticks to my mind is Jacoby Ellsbury. I remember going to winter meetings after we made that prediction. I don't even remember what he signed for, $150 million or something.
Yeah.
We got within a couple million dollars of that one. That was a good one. What do you think, Steve? You got any?
I mean, I got a James McCann jersey over my shoulder there, framed on the wall, because that was a prop bet between Tim and I. Tim wanted to put him at, like, I don't know, $5 million or something. And I was like, this guy's getting 30 plus. And
he's really?
Like, no, yeah. Absolutely not. We made a little wager, and it seems like Tim and I have one of those every year. It's usually a catcher that I think is going to get paid more money than he is.
Yeah. So this year I learned my lesson, and when he started pumping up Christian Vasquez, I said, yeah, no, you're right, Steve.
I still wanted to go higher up Vasquez.
It was a 3-year deal. It's totally fine. We're putting that.
So that would be the one this year, if you had to make one of those bets, Vasquez?
No, I actually agreed on him. So the one where I'm like, listen, I just don't agree with you, but you guys are really smart and plugged in, so I'm just going to let this be the prediction, would be Carlos Estevez. If I was making lists, I wouldn't have put him on the list if I was doing it solo, and it would have been kind of an oversight. So Anthony Franco, who collaborated with us as well, was just really stumping for Estevez, that he throws hard, and, you know, they're going to get him out of Colorado, and he's going to get a 3-year deal. Everybody's going to want him. And I'm like, no, he's not going to get a 3-year deal. And I still don't think he is, but he's on the list having it in deference to Anthony and Steve.
I like it. No, I like it. I mean, this is what makes the conversation fun, because now I'm going to look at Estevez and I'm like, oh yeah, you know, before I wouldn't even pay any attention to it.
And, and so if Anthony's right, I'm going to send him the only Carlos Estevez jersey that exists outside of his own family, I would assume. No offense.
And we should know that along with you guys, Anthony Franco and Dara McDonald also are contributors to this, making the predictions.
Yeah.
So, which is, and you guys have talked before about this, about how you sort of get together and you exchange ideas, and I would imagine emails, and it's a very sort of detailed back and forth sort of thing, right?
Yeah. So basically for the entire time, I've kind of been the quarterback of it. This year, I kind of passed the torch to Steve. So almost everything that you see written in the post was written by Steve. And he took a little bit more of the leadership role of it this year. But we still ended up doing something a little bit close to our typical process for deliberation, which is we get like a Slack chat going with me and Steve and Anthony, and really just argue for hours on end about free agents. And we start that, it's all of October. It's fun, and it's also really draining, because you're arguing about like Drew Smyly, and you're like, this is ridiculous. We got to get back on track.
So it's a question that I've asked you guys before. What is the, other than Estevez, what was the one that you argued about that led to the most spirited debate?
What do you think, Steve?
Oh man, the most spirited debate. I don't know. Like we had some, and this is just a me thing, I guess. I don't know why. I don't have anything against the guy personally. I'm sure he's a good dude, but I just like the jerks in Profar this year. I was just like, this guy, there's so many predictions out there for him, you know, going 4 years and 50 million. And Tim kind of kept being like, are we light on this guy? And I'm like, no, we're too heavy on him at two. And I wanted him at like 2 and 15. And I think we put 220, and that's fine. And he might get more than that. He surprised us the last time, but there's definitely some of that. And it's kind of a fun, or not, maybe not fun, but like a weird quirk of the entire exercise, is that you find yourself arguing for the reasons why a guy that maybe you don't even like that much as a player, but why the market will value him. And so yeah. You're like, listen, I don't think this guy's like that good, but like somebody's going to for these reasons and he's going to get paid. And you're sitting there like arguing for numbers that in your mind are like, this is insane. Like I would never ever like endorse this contract personally, but you kind of have to, yeah, try to put yourself into the headspace of how the market's going to react to a guy.
It's interesting that you say that. You know, we were just talking, I just had Dayton Moore on, and we were talking about how, you know, how teams value things. And is it maybe it's a little bit cyclical now with teams maybe coming back around to valuing, doing the whole, we value this guy because he's a good guy. He's a good clubhouse guy. Where I think in the last couple of years, he had tilted so much into, well, you know, we see that he has this ERA, but his spin rate's this. And we, so for you guys, you know, that's the challenge too, right? Like you see a guy and you're like, yeah, but then you hear the buzz. Well, hey, listen, we like the analytics on this guy. We like the profile of this guy going forward. And so that's a challenge, right? And that must be a little bit different this time around.
Yeah, I would say we can usually take a fairly educated guess at who the guys who are going to have buzz based on stats or stat casts or stuff like that. The thing that can be harder is the Eric Hosmers of the world, where it's like, we know he's going to get a lot of money. We know it's going to be more money than we think he's worth, but we still think he's going to get it. And so we're trying to predict what he is going to get and what his earning power is. And so you have to put him kind of higher than you're comfortable with, and it's going to be based on some intangible things. And you know, we don't really have a good survey of like, well, why does everybody love Jurickson and Profar so much, or Eric Hosmer? And we don't really know why.
Yeah. Go ahead, Steve.
I was to piggyback on that the byproduct of that is then people, you know, assuming that we think that that's, you know, what this player is worth. And it's like, well, that's not really what we're doing.
Keith Law kind of does a list, and he's been doing it for a long time, and it's really good. And it's like, here's what I would pay the player. And, you know, for example, he said he would give Aaron Judge a 4-year deal. And I was like, well, yeah, okay, that makes sense. And I mean, you're not even really in the bidding here at all. Mm-hmm. So we put him for 8, I think, or 8 9. Years,
3:30.
Yeah, and so, you know, 8, we're not, it's not an endorsement, you know.
Yeah.
How much did the agents factor in? Obviously, you know, it's with one agent in particular, you know, everyone's like, oh, well.
But, you know. So, you know, and I don't want to be seen as like stumping for the Boris Corporation, because we really try to be neutral. But he does seem to have, or his company seems to have, some ability to get, on average, to get a free agent paid beyond normal expectations. And we do factor that in, and we did factor that in this year. I think the best example was Josh Bell. Josh Bell was a guy, when he was going good this year, I was maybe pushing a 5-year deal, like a Nick Castellanos level deal, and that was kind of the ceiling. Then he tanked for the last couple months. And then, you know, we were talking 2-3 years, and I see a lot of predictions like that, but we hashed this out like ad nauseum, and we landed at 4 years for Bell. And it's like, well, who would give that to him? And we couldn't really answer that all that well, but we kind of just bet on Scott Boris just finding a way. Like he's done that so many times, where you couldn't really identify what team it was going to be that would give this crazy-ish contract, and he still got it. That's not every single time, but it's a lot, and I believe it's more than other agencies can pull off.
Yeah, I think part of that stems from, like, he just has so many clients in general. But, I mean, with regard to Bell, like, we looked specifically at, like, almost like this type of skill set, you know. And you mentioned Castellanos, which is, like, a very offensive first player, very, like, defensively limited. And you go back and you look at, you know, he got Castellanos, that's, you know, a nice contract twice in free agency. Mike Moustakas, the deal with the Reds, it took him a few times. And Moustakas is an example, you know, with the first and second trip through free agency, how maybe, like, it's not a guarantee that just like, oh, hey, like it's, you know, the Boris Corporation, so they're going to get this guy tons of money. Like, I think that's a fallacy as well, but there are some demonstrated examples of like, this is a guy who we have looked at and said, we don't see it. And we've gone low on the prediction. And then it's, you know, 3 months later, lo and behold, like here we are. it's like, oh, well, yeah, you know, we were talking about that and we all kind of agreed, like, it doesn't make sense to us, so it's not going to happen. And there are just certain circumstances where Bell being one, where I think we just kind of like put the trust there and said, okay, like, yeah, like, we don't see it, but it's a vote in favor of you've gotten this skill set paid enough times in the past that we're like, okay, you'll find a way.
That's why I think it's really unbelievable that you guys do what you do, because we just went through it. I mean, you had agents, you have analytics, you have, perception, personality perception, you know, all of that stuff, and you have to factor it all in. Yeah. And so looking at the number one guy, you already mentioned him, Aaron Judge. You guys all four of you had him go in the Yankees, which I would concur. Congratulations. I agree. But 8 years at 332. 8 years at 332. The guy's he's into his 30s, which obviously you factor that in. Was there, when he's going through this historic year and you guys landed 8 years? Well, let me ask you this. Before this year, knowing this guy's going to be a free agent from day one, this was the conversation with Aaron Judge, contract year. Did you think that he would land at 8 years, 332? It was about what you thought he would land at.
Oh, no way. No. I think that this year got him in our minds the eighth year that we really didn't think made sense for him at his age. So we granted him that. And then I also think we pumped up the average annual value quite a bit. So what was like the Yankees offer was like 30, right?
Yeah.
30 and a half was the AAV.
Yeah. So, maybe with like a typical Judge year, I would maybe said like 7 times 35 or something in that range, or maybe even pushing a little beyond, but, we're over 40. So.
Yeah. It was just, I'm looking at WRC plus, like it's the best non Barry Bonds season anyone's had since Ted Williams in 1957. Like it's insane what he went and did this year. And you know, one of the things that we look at and try to keep in mind when we're predicting these contracts and specifically the lengths is there is a pretty demonstrated pattern of what age teams are willing to pay through for position players, for pitchers. And the days of a 30 or 31 year old free agent getting a 10 year deal that goes until he's 40 have kind of like come and gone. Most of those decade long deals you see are for guys who are like Harper, Machado, 26 years old, 27, Corey Seager. Seager might have been 28. But point being, it's a younger age. And we did give Judge the extra year. We've said that some teams gonna, even though most free agent contracts for position players are capped at age 37. Like Judge's season was so special and so good that he's not only going to not have to sacrifice that annual value, he's going to get the extra year that teams are typically reluctant to give out. And the contract that we picked, we kind of settled on because it makes him the first $40 million position player. And it's enough to push him past Bryce Harper's all-time free agent record. He doesn't have the largest contract ever, but it's the largest free agent deal. So I think that's something that will, you know, certainly matter to both the player and the agent.
You know, one thing on the Yankees topic, things get really crazy when we're about to publish the list. We're the only ones. We like to wait until all the qualifying offers are known and then hit publish. And there's always like a little flurry of activity. And it was like, we got to drop Suarez off this list and put somebody else on it. And should we take Kershaw off since he's close to a deal? And finally, at some point, I'm always just like, just hit publish. This has to go out. Mm-hmm. But in terms of Judge, you know, especially when reporters started talking to Zaidi and like kind of he basically said there's no player that we would be incapable of signing if, you know, interest is mutual. And, you know, for the way GMs talk these days, I found that to be pretty interesting and relatively bold, kind of like saying like, hey, you know, he's not saying money is no object, but he's saying as close as the GM might come to that. And I was telling Steve, if I had more time and was willing to change all my other picks to accommodate, I might have been willing to go with the Giants as my pick. And I think it would have been kind of fun too to have us not all agreeing. So that might have been a bit of a factor. But if had I done that, I would have had to think about how will the Yankees spend their money now? And I think I had like Correa on the Giants, so I didn't take him off. And it was like, okay, do I want to redo all this stuff or just leave it? So I just left it. But I don't have like total certainty. Like it does seem like those are the top two teams, and it's really hard for me to see other teams wedging in, even though I'm sure there's going to be competitive offers from teams outside of those two. I definitely cannot identify them at this point. Like even just logically, like I can't.
I think there'll be other offers, and I agree. Like, I don't necessarily feel it's, you know, like a slam dunk, like 90% Judge is back to the Yankees. But it's one of those things. I wish one of us had just like, just for the fun of it, like, cause, and not only for the fun of it, but to reflect the fact that like, we do think there's like a legitimate, not crazy, you know, pie in the sky chance. Yeah. He leaves, like, and it's not, it could be, you know, closer to like 55-45% than, you know, when you see all of us predict the Yankees across the board, it's like, oh, well, you know, I think a lot of people think, oh, 100%, they think he's going back. And it's like, that's not the case at all. I think we all just felt slightly better as individuals, and we don't collaborate, you know, with each other on the team picks necessarily. So I think we all just felt slightly better about the Yankees than, you know, the Giants or like Tim said, some kind of, you know, random mystery team. The Mariners could do it. The Padres seem to like just dig money out of nowhere and are always in on every marquee free agent. So they'll probably try to get something creative done. But yeah, I wish one of us, just to kind of reflect, we don't think this is a certainty. I do wish that somebody had kind of gone off the rails a little bit there, like Anthony did last year when he picked Freeman to leave the Braves.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, listen, I mean, I think the consensus, you know, 90% of people would agree with you guys about the going back to the Yankees. It just feels like ultimately you want to be right. You're right. And I think that you guys going with what you believe is going to be right. So I do not begrudge you for picking the Yankees. Now, overall, this free agent class, I was on MLB Network Radio yesterday, and I said, it was brought up. I said, well, this free agent class stinks. And then I'm like, oh, that was strong. You know, my apologies to all the free agents, you know, but I mean, my point was that, you know, like for instance, for the Red Sox, they need a right fielder. Like they need an impactful right fielder. Like who's that guy they're going to sign for 4 years and feel really good about, you know, other than like the Aaron Judge? Am I missing somebody? I mean, that's.
It feels kind of top heavy to me.
Yeah.
You know, and that, particularly in outfield, like if you're not signing Judge or Nimmo, you're not feeling great about whoever you're signing, you know?
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. That's a good way to put it.
I mean, there's not even really like a Schwarber out there type of like $100 million. Hey, this guy is really good at one thing, but not as great as another thing. Like Haniger is below that, and Benintendi is below that. And so outfield, like obviously most teams are not even really getting into Judge. And I think Nimmo is probably scaring off a fair number of clubs. And mm-hmm. I also think, like, you wouldn't really sign him if you're not plugging him in center field. So, yeah, I mean, it's kind of slim pickings, really.
Yeah,
especially outfield.
Yeah, so, again, I'm sorry for saying it stinks, but I think you hit the nail on the head. You don't feel great about some of these deals that you might have to sign these guys to, right?
And then so many of them are shortstops or like super high.
Well, that's what I was going to say is that it's still why I say it stinks. It's not uninteresting. Like we have Judge, we obviously have like DeGrom, but we also have the shortstop. This is the very unique part of this is the shortstops. The question I would ask you guys, the first question about the shortstop situation, is there any scenario you see where the musical chairs of the four shortstops, someone, not everyone's going to get a job, but doesn't necessarily get what they're looking for and maybe has to go sort of the Correa route or something along those lines of last year?
Yeah, I think that's absolutely plausible. I mean, Correa is like, obviously we had a lockout, he changes agents and stuff, but I mean, to me, the one who I think could, I think people think Correa is going to go out looking for like 8-9 years. And then if he doesn't get it, he would go short term again. But I think that now that he's shed the qualifying offer and he has Boris, that he's really just going to max out and he'll succeed in that. So for me, the one who I think could kind of come up short or is the most likely to, would probably be Bogarts, in that he had these really big defensive questions, and then he went out and had, I think, was what was considered a pretty good defensive year, but just leaving open the question of, well, what is he next year as a shortstop defensively, and how long are we keeping him at this position? And, you know, he's a great hitter, but, you know, he had a little bit of power weirdness and stuff this year, so it's kind of like, I think we put, 7 years on him? I mean, it's,
yeah,
like,
7 years, 189.
Somehow the chairs stop, and 7 years is not happening, and people start offering him 5 and 6, and he's like, well, I don't like this, so I'm going to do something shorter. I mean, what do you think, Steve?
Yeah, I think I agree that, we talked about this a little bit, that Bogarts kind of has that potential. Like you said, he had the, if he had gone out and had his normal offensive year and then also had the defensive metrics tick upward and everything, and there was like this kind of like big like narrative about like how like he improved his defense and he's still this amazing, he was still a really good hitter, but you don't, you know, it took until, I don't know, I think in middle of August, he was still sitting on single digit home runs. Like he had a big finish and hit some home runs and showed a little bit more power late in the season, but it wasn't the typical path that Bogarts takes to having a really good offensive year. I just feel like there are fewer question marks surrounding certainly Turner and Correa and Swanson. I don't think Swanson is in a position, and he's kind of another one of those players where we were talking and thinking like, all right, like he's had a few good years and we like the player well enough, but like we're going to predict a contract that's beyond the scope of like what we consider reasonable for him. And so for him to be the one who went out and took a short-term deal, I think it makes the most sense for him to go out, get his max contract wherever he can. But Bogarts, yeah, like it could hit a situation where he's looking at, you know, 3 and 4 year offers at like super premium annual values, and that could have appeal to him, especially since he took the team friendly extension in the first place with the Red Sox. And, you know, that 6 years and 120 when he would have been a 27-year-old, 26-year-old free agent was really friendly to Boston. Mm-hmm. And so the allure of, if he has to take a short-term deal, kind of almost recouping some of that money that he probably left on the table the first 3 years of that extension, I think that holds some appeal.
He, you know, I think the Red Sox are banking on that to a certain extent. We'll have to see where they land. And maybe, you know, they're going to like react to the market. But you look at how they've reacted, you know, they were basically banking on him not performing really as well as he did, at least defensively. And and still, because you never, if you can avoid it, you don't let a guy get to free agency, because once you do that, you get the name on the Jumbotron. All he needs is a Dave Dombrowski of the world throwing money at you. And then look at Kyle Schwarber. Yep. Like Kyle Schwarber got double from Dombrowski what the Red Sox were offering. Double. I mean, that's nuts.
Rob, do you think the Red Sox's impression of Bogarts' defensive abilities has changed significantly in the last year?
Significantly? No. Somewhat, yes. And it was interesting because when I did a podcast with Bloom, I asked him, you know, this goes to what we were talking about before, about all the off-field stuff, the clubhouse stuff, and how much do you factor that in? Because a lot of people think like GMs like Bloom don't value that enough, or this new wave of GMs don't value that. He said, no, of course we do. Of course we do. If we didn't, then at 30 years old, we wouldn't even be getting on the bus with him. Like, that's what he said. And I mean, first of all, you're tipping your hand about how you view your free agents, number one, which is good luck to all the 30-year-old free agents out there, yeah, the Boston Red Sox. And number two, do you really mean it? Because, and how much do you mean it? Because that's the big, you know, that it sounds good, and that's what all the fans wanted to hear. But, you know, it's, and I do think, and this comes back to my original thing, which is I do think some of this is cyclical, where at least this new wave of GMs are sort of understanding the perception of them. So they, you know, they at least have to say things like that.
They say that stuff, yeah.
Right. But, you know, you look at the other shortstops, and you guys had said, you know, you're wrestling sort of with who's the top shortstop, Correa and Turner. And, you know, it's, if you, I think that the more that you read in the last month, when everyone's breaking this stuff down, Trey Turner seems like the best player on the planet. Like, people love themselves from Trey Turner, including, yeah, by the way, the guys who play with him. And so, I mean, how close was that for you guys? Because Correa obviously is coming off for like a year for him.
I think kind of your initial impression is going to be to have Trey outrank Correa. I think Steve and Anthony kind of talked me into and eventually got me to agree with the idea that Correa possibly or slightly probably has a little more earning power, I think, because of his age and maybe superior defense. Where do you land on that, Steve?
Yeah, it's one of those things. Correa really helped himself out over the finish of the season. For a long time, we did have Turner better. It's funny. I've heard a lot of people say, you know, not just Rob, that, you know, Correa had kind of an year. And like, I guess if you look at his counting stats, he did. But by the time you add up his finish and you factor in the fact that like power throughout the league was down as a whole this year, which applies to Bogaerts too, by the way. So I should throw that caveat in there. We're talking about his drop in power. But like, Correa still ended up on a rate basis, like pretty similar to what he was last year. His WAR totals and everything look less because he didn't replicate last year's ridiculous like platinum glove season, and a couple defensive stats actually had him you know, below average even. But like, to Rob's point on how like this year didn't wildly change teams for the Red Sox perception of Bogaerts defense, I don't think that one year of kind of like so-so defensive metrics on Correa are going to wildly change the manner in which, you know, front offices around the league are going to look at him. I think they're still going to see him as somebody who's one of the five or six best defensive, you know, shortstops in the game. His arm strength is still off the charts on like the StatCast infield throw ratings, which are super cool that they just released. And that's really the main differentiator from Correa's 2021 season to his 2022. And I look at it and he's a year older now, but he also doesn't have a qualifying offer. He's still younger than Turner. And I just think he kind of really quietly like picked up the offense over the season's final 2.5-ish months and really put himself back into position to kind of say, like, it's not a down year for me offensively. Maybe it was defensively, but my whole like body of work as a shortstop still speaks to the upside and the talent that I have. And 28 and no qualifying offer. It's just hard to bet against him.
No qualifying.
You know what Correa does not have is a hype video narrated by John Hamm.
Oh, my goodness.
That was so ridiculous.
I feel like I want to do a hype video on the hype video. I want to do like
please do.
I want to do like a – well, first, really of all, one of my missions in life, I mean in the next 2 months, I definitely want to do a podcast with John Hamm talking about the hype video.
Oh, please do. And where was he sitting when he recorded that? And why does it sound so bad? And
let's be honest. It's like, what is, I guess, I don't know. I guess it can't hurt.
For?
But what's it for?
It's for other players. It's for other players to look at and say, that's super cool. I want that agency. It's not front
look
office.
What they did for Trey. It's awesome.
Time Bloom is not going to look at that video and be like, wow, I really do need to sign Trey Turner.
No, but that's a great point. And it's much like when Boris is doing his one man show the other day at the GM meetings. And all I can think of is, I want to hire him just for him to make my name into a pun and then make me a lot of money. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The puns are great. I love it. And, you know, as much as I'm like, you hear him saying this stupid stuff about the X-Men and all that stuff, and you're like, okay, today's GMs, like, this doesn't matter. But then, like, you read the thing about Jim Crane today and that he's, like, essentially, you know, Steinbrennering the Astros now, and you know, he gave Montero all this money, and you're like, well, I mean, given the money at stake, it makes sense to try to push some goofy stuff on an owner who probably shouldn't be running baseball operations. Like, there's still a guy out there.
A lot of those, especially the big contracts, you know, are so conducted at the ownership level. You know, some teams certainly more than others, but I mean, even if it's a owner who has full trust in his baseball operations, but they're not giving him, you know, carte blanche to just go out and spend $300 something million. It's like, you, when you're, you know, signing a player for that much money, like, I'm going to have to sign off on it, and you're going to need to be sold on that. And maybe, you know, maybe that John Hamm video, you know, comes through there for whatever team signs Trey Turner. I'm not sure.
I wonder if some GMs, like the owners, kind of heading down the path toward doing a bad, really long contract for a very good player. And the GM thinks, well, is this the hill I want to die on and then basically not get this player? And how long am I going to be in this job? Like 3, 4, 5?
Oh, I'm sure it happens. You know, yeah, like, absolutely.
Okay, fine. Go sign the guy and maybe we'll win in the next 3
Listen,
years.
Listen, I mean, again, not to keep it Red Sox-centric, but Pablo Sandoval, Hanley Ramirez offseason?
Yep.
You know, and like I had – when they're talking about – you talk about perception. I had a very smart executive in the front office say, oh, well, yeah, listen, because you know, Pablo was just coming off the World Series MVP. Oh, well, he performs the best on the best stage, and every day is a big stage at Fenway Park. I'm like, that's the worst line of thinking. You know what I got to counter that? His 700 OPS over the last 3 years, you know?
Yeah, so, he's just not that great of a hitter.
But like, they had the, you know, they had the warehouse full of panda hats. And yeah, they had it ready to go. Let me ask you this. Kodai Senga is a guy, and there's always, usually a few guys from Japan. From your guys' perspective, is that a more difficult one for you to project?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Guys coming up from Japan I just think there's fewer comparables. There's less information. And there's obviously no info about how he's performed the major leagues, and you're kind of speculating there. So yeah, we always have, I think, more variance on those contracts.
Yeah
and it depends with those types of players specifically. We'll often try to, you know, reach out to, you know, scouts with a few teams or that kind of thing, and at least try to ascertain, like, not, hey, what do you think this guy's worth, but like, how do you think, you know, he'd fare against major league competition and that kind of thing. And, you know, sometimes we get great answers. Sometimes we've had, you know, teams tell us like, oh, you know, that guy's, no, he's not even like a, you know, he's barely even like a big leaguer. And then like that team turns around and signs him and we're like, you, well, you so know, we moved away from leaning too heavily into
you know,
that
who was like that was Kikuchi. Kikuchi was a guy, like, some teams are like, nah, not happening. And the next thing you know, boom, you know, he's signing. And then he signs again. So I don't know.
Yeah, I think like there's so much mystery. I'm like, and yeah. I think that like even now the teams kind of, I don't want to say fall for it, but like are more intrigued by it. Like if there was a Senga, but, you know, with major league experience, he wouldn't seem as interesting.
Yeah, we talked about this with regard to Nick Martinez when I was, you know, trying to figure out if he was going to opt out of the $18 million that's left on his Padres contract a couple months ago, and he ended up doing so. But his earning power wasn't, I don't think, like, clearly, like, that much more than the 3 years and 18 that he had. He might go get that money over 2 years, though, and then set himself up to be a little better off down the line. There's that that unknown, that upside, and you see like this, oh, well, what could this guy do? And like, you're willing to pay for that. And then they come back here and Martinez had a really solid year in San Diego, like nice pitcher, but wasn't overpowering, wasn't blowing guys away and dominating them. And it became kind of a borderline question, like, which sounds crazy. Like he got $25.5 million last offseason based on just like, you know, a hope and a prayer. And then this year he goes out and performs decently against, you know, major league hitters, not amazing, but decently. And you're sitting there like, well, is he gonna walk away from 3 and 18? He might not get that on the market. Like there's a logical disconnect there, but teams are very willing to bet on the upside and bet on the unknown. And I think you see some of that with whether it's Kodai Senga or Seiya Suzuki last year or Kikuchi in Seattle, you know, years prior. That level of intrigue is appealing.
Well, guys, you've been very generous with your time. Last thing, I'm gonna spin the wheel of free agents, and I want you to land on the one guy in your top 50 of all your predictions, which you're like, I nailed that. Like we talked about the ones that you said, Jacoby Ellsbury, James McCann. Okay. Mm-hmm. Give me the guy that you like. If you had to go to the betting table or the betting window and say, this is what I'm betting on, this prediction, which one would it be? Both team and terms.
Oh, geez.
Yeah. See, come on.
I gotta like look at the top 50.
There you must have been one like, man, I nailed that one.
You know what I want to go with that I think is like a little out there, but I'm just going to go with it, would be Justin Verlander. I just got this idea in my head that I could see him on the Dodgers. We went 3 years and $120 million. I won't take credit for the 3 years because that was a Stephen Anthony push, but I could see it, and I think most people assume too. But I also see the logic. He doesn't need to accept two because he's that good and he wants to play in, you know, into his mid-40s. And I also think there's kind of this assumption that the Astros are going to keep him. With the Crane variable, I really have no idea. But I think that when a player does like one team-friendly-ish deal, as he kind of did, it doesn't automatically mean the next deal a year later is going to be the exact same way. And sometimes it can mean the opposite. Like, okay, I gave you this gift, right? You made me, prove it by having like an innings thing to trigger the player option or whatever. And I did it. And I basically won the Cy Young Award most likely. Now I want $40 million a year. And I don't want 25 or 30 or 35. And I'm awesome. I'm Justin Verlander. And like, I could see Crane just being like, no, you know, we have tons of pitching. We don't want to do that. And then you look at like, a team like the Dodgers, they love the short-term deals. He doesn't have a qualifying offer. This also applies to the Red Sox and a lot of teams, but I think he could leave. So, I mean, I'll go with that one.
I tell you what, you had me convinced. I like that. I like that a lot. I like that, all that line of thinking. And every time you predict that anybody predicts the Dodgers, I kind of feel good about it. You know, I feel like they're going to pay the money. And as you said, it's going to be like a short-term deal. But they'll pay whatever amount of money it takes, and there you have to eliminate the idea of the player not wanting to play there because it's L.A. It's
maybe
the
Dodgers. He didn't before, but maybe he does now. I know, who knows?
Yeah. Like, what do you got? What do you guys see? Anything?
I went to bat pretty hard for the not nearly the same scale as the Verlander thing here, but I went to bat pretty hard for Taylor Rogers as one of our like three best. Well, wound up being. At this point, he's your top reliever because Diaz and Suarez have come off the board. He was really, really bad the last, like, 3 months of the season, and I think teams just kind of aren't going to care. Like, his last, like, bad month in San Diego was pretty fluky. If you look at, like, the average on balls in play, it was literally 500. So I think teams are kind of going to be willing to write that off. And then home runs were never a problem for him until he got to Milwaukee, and he gave up some big ones there. And I think Brewers fans – think I'm nuts for saying that this guy is going to get 3 years and be one of the top paid relievers on the market. But, that could come down to anything, tipping pitches or just some small, you know, white noise. You go back to when he added a slider to his arsenal, like Memorial Day weekend, 2018, you can like look up the pitch log. And it's like, from that moment on, he went from like, oh, this guy's like kind of a good reliever to like, he's a ERA barely above two, like striking out 35% of his opponents and walking like 4% of them for a solid like 3.5 years. He was just a monster. And I think if he hadn't had the bad finish this year, I would have been putting like 4 years in like Raisel Iglesias territory, like 4 years and 50 plus on him. Yeah. So I think some people kind of, and some commenters were like, you know, how Taylor Rogers is going to get like a year and whatever. He won't. I think he's going to get paid 3 years. I think teams aren't going to care about the bad finish. And I think it's going to be a good deal for whoever signs
him. And so. you just said it. He just, listen, I mean, he's the benefactor of all these other guys signing.
Yeah. 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 All these
are gone and they got more money than we thought. So
right.
Well, for him. And you see, and the relief market is crazy so far. Like, we thought we were aggressive. Our list, we were going to have 3 years and $30 million on Robert Suarez, and he blew that out of the water. So like, well, and I thought that was an aggressive pick in the first place. So it bodes well moving forward for relievers.
Well, guys, you had me convinced about everything you said. I'm ready to go. Like I said, Christmas in November. Thanks. It's one of my favorite times of the year, not only for the list, but also talk to you guys. I appreciate it. And we'll reconvene. I guess I'll see you at the winter meetings. Is or
yeah,
or,
but I, actually we're skipping it
this year, not so much. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, I think I might go next year. Yeah,
that's I got a new little baby at home. No winter meetings this year. So.
That's okay.
I just don't really like going. I like going when I see people like you, but you know, for the most part, it's a lot of standing around.
It is a lot of standing around, and you can, and you know what? It's not only you and me and everybody else in the media. It's the executives. They don't want to go anymore either. I mean, it's like, they don't need to. It's like, you know, you get into these enormous hotels and all you're doing is you're on the phone or on Zoom or whatever anyway.
I'd be more plugged in if I just like watch Twitter on my phone. So yeah, well,
yes, that's how life is now. Absolutely.
Sadly.
But sadly. All right, guys. Thanks so much, man.
Thanks for having us, Rob.
Thanks so much, Rob. Take care.